T-minus 25 seconds. 20 seconds and counting. T-minus 15 seconds. Guidance is internal. 12, 11, 10, 9. Ignition sequence start. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. All engine running. Liftoff. We have a liftoff. 32 minutes past the hour. Tower cleared.
Here, we got a roll program.
And as Apollo 11 does its roll program, this podcast now does its roll program. The tape is rolling. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world. My name is Grant Cameron, and you're listening to the Paranormal UFO Consciousness Podcast. Thank you for taking time from your life to be here.
There it is. Okay. Okay. Looks like we're rolling here. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world today. And for those who are living in the here and now, we welcome you as well. This is Grant Cameron, and I'm joined by my good friends, Matt the Pawn Guy, and Desta, my noble assistant, who helps me edit books, who's a great channeler and has a great deal of knowledge on anything paranormal, and who is now going to get into one of my favorite topics that we're going to talk about today is apports. And I guess maybe I'll throw it over to Desta just to talk about apports. Remember, when we put out the book, it's called Weird, because apports is definitely weird. When any sort of apported object appears or manifests or whatever, the first instinct you get is to say, man, that's weird. So, but when we put the book out, we had people who wanted to sort of argue about terms, sort of the left brain thing. Let's give it a name. Let's break it down. Can you describe our understanding of apports and manifestations as opposed to people who wanted to call them asports and apports and all this other stuff?
Well, I think there's a differentiation between a whole bunch of them, but apports in general are supposed to be taken from somewhere and brought here. So I think that the way that we've seen that the spirit defines it is, it's being taken from somewhere on the earth, you know, it could be anywhere, and then disintegrated somewhere else and reintegrated in front of you. So they say, or some of the stories that I've heard now is that, so it could just be lost gems. A lot of the apports are jewelry, gems, rings, stuff like that. So apparently if, you know, they're not specifically stealing it from someone's jewelry box, although it could be someone who maybe never looks in their jewelry box kind of thing. It might be like taken. And a lot of the apports that are given to people oftentimes disappear again. Someone will lock it in a box or something because they think it's special that they just got this apport. And then 6 months later, they go and look in on it and it's gone. So they're taken from somewhere else on Earth and brought back here, whether it's by a physical medium or if it's something like a lot of people think their loved ones who have just recently passed or whatever give them dimes. So it's just a materialization of an object in a place, but that object is taken from somewhere. It's not just like they don't just make it up kind of thing.
And they most commonly come in seances. Right.
Yeah, I guess originally you can say that back in the, you know, early 1900s or whatever, that's what they were doing is the apports were coming from seances. Yeah.
And so I just had a pre-interview with Jeffrey Mishlov about, he's going to do an interview on the apports, and he brought up the one with the newspaper, the famous newspaper that appeared brand new from 1940s or whatever. And that within a couple of weeks it had turned yellow. But that's one of the ideas. Now behind me, I've got the one that I thought was kind of cool. We were in Tucson, Arizona. We were lecturing. You were at that lecture, weren't you?
Yeah.
And the researcher whose name escapes me wanted to show me these ones during the break. And this is this Paula, who is an experiencer, and this behind me is this pile of dirt. So she goes into the bathroom, and it's not dirt, it's sort of a granular type stuff. I'm not sure, do you remember where they analyzed it? Sand stuff. And it has these little...
It was silica, white... I think there was silica in it. So I think it's just like a sand-based dirt kind of thing.
Yeah, and it has these little white discs in it. And then she had the one where she went to the restaurant and they found a pile of the same sort of stuff underneath her bench at the restaurant. And then she had the really weird stuff where they were really playing games where they would take the iPhone, the earbud and string it through the zipper. And it's like just
cover
like,
purse. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's that. So these bizarre things, and to me, it's like it's almost like they want this stuff to be really, really weird. And it's almost like science advances one funeral at a time, and it also advances out of curiosity. So unless you're curious, you're not gonna investigate. So they want it really weird, so you'll investigate. Almost like, you know, I always used to say about cattle mutilations. Why do they take every last drop of blood out of the cow? Because if they don't, you're not gonna pay any attention to it. They want it to be really weird. It's like, how the hell did they do that? And then that's what they do. So what we want to talk about, we're talking a little bit about today, is you go into all sorts of different fields, and you started to attend seance stuff. So reports come from many different paranormal phenomena, and the one that got me into the report book was, I was talking to Ray Hernandez, who at LAX Airport, and I said to Ray, the whole thing, he had 3,000 or 4,000 experiencers, and I said to him, Ray, who's your best guy? I mean, all these experiencers, who's got the best story? And he said, oh, Alberto. Alberto's got the best story. And then he started talking about these reports, and I didn't know what he was talking about. And I started to investigate, and that's when I found Jeffrey Mishlove had done this interview with Stanley Krippner, who was sort of an expert on reports. And he was working with psychics. So Ray Hernandez had this Alberto guy had these reports, and he talked about the one with the sword. The sword fell out of the ceiling. I went, a sword? Are you kidding? Come on. It's just like, and he said he's got this collection. He had this, you could see this cabinet. Have you seen the photo? This cabinet of all these different things that have fallen out of the, and there's all sorts of weird things that have fallen out of the ceiling. And Stanley Krippner had the one with the ports with a psychic out of Brazil. So it happens around experiencers, physical medium we're going to talk about today, ghost type stuff, and any sort of paranormal phenomena, it seems to happen around. And Stanley Krippner talked about this synchronicity that got me to do the book, and that was that Krippner said, well, I had all these reports from this psychic in Brazil. I collected them all, and then my house got broken into, and someone stole the whole collection.
Well, that's
and
right.
Then he said, so what I did was in order to save the rest of them, the next time I got a whole collection, I sent them to Canada. I sent them to a university at the University of Manitoba. And I went, oh, get out of here. Like, I'm at the University of Manitoba for 40 years. Like, what's the chances that I'm studying this report thing and there's a collection at the University of Manitoba? And there's only two big collections. One's at the University of Manitoba here. And there's actually a woman that just actually came from Europe that actually went and looked at the collection. She had read the book. She bought the book and went there and actually looked at it. And the other one was at Stanford University, which gets into what we're going to talk about today with the whole thing with physical mediums. And that was, people maybe not know the story, I should really tell it because it's an interesting story about Leland Stanford was the guy who started Stanford University, where it cost you like $50,000 a year to attend now. And this is back in the about 1870. And his wife was 40 years old and they couldn't have a child. And then all of a sudden she gets pregnant at 40 years old and they have this boy and they name him Leland Stanford Jr. And he lives and he dies at 15 years old from typhoid in Italy. And the father is with him. And there's various versions of the story, but he has a dream and his son comes to him in the dream. And he's saying, you know, my son is going to die now. I've got all this money. He was a big railway guy, one of the richest guys in the United States, had all this money. And he said, I've got nothing to live for. And the son comes in the dream. And some of the stories say this is actually the night when he dies, that when he wakes up, the son is dead. And he said, Dad, you do have stuff to live for. You should live for others. You should make a university for other children who aren't rich that can go to university. And so when he wakes up from this dream, he says to his wife, I do have something to live for. The children of California will be our children. And he builds Stanford University. And the other weird thing was they started to have seances to try to contact this kid. The wife started having seances. And the brother, Leland Stanford's brother, was again a rich guy, and he ended up in Australia and he was around this physical medium in Australia, and all these reports came, and he actually gave all those reports. That's the other collection. So there's a collection at University of Manitoba that Stanley Krippner put there, and there's this collection at Stanford University from, I think it was Thomas Stanford, who put them there, and he gave hundreds of thousands of dollars. You got to remember, this is like in the 1910s when he gave this money, huge, for paranormal research. And of course, because there was no paranormal research, there's no, that's all garbage, they used the money to finance the psychology department at Stanford University for many, many years. Oh, that's where all the money went. And they built a huge library there. And that's where the other big report collection is at Stanford University. So you got into this seance thing. So maybe I'll turn it over to you and Matt. Matt was there. And we have Matt here because Matt has a little more skeptical view of things and sees it from the way a lot of people may see it today. He brought up questions, and he maybe still has questions as to what we can do to test this. Because I actually proposed to you that if you can learn to do this, and that's what you're proposing to do, that we can actually maybe study this and obtain some information. Because you remember when I asked you, when we're going to talk about this medium who has these things come out of his mouth. And my first question to you was, were they dry? And you said, yeah, they were. And that's the whole thing. So if he's got them in his mouth and he's hiding them in his mouth, they're going to come out wet with saliva on them. Because I wanted to do the DNA test. I wanted to do Kai Muga, who's a big physical medium in Germany. And he had agreed to do my DNA test. And the DNA test is if you get a trans channeler or a physical medium who another being takes over the body, according to my theory, the DNA is going to change. So if we can do a DNA test before they're before the channel or before they do the physical medium thing, and then when their physical medium channeling or whatever they're doing, you get a second one. If a being takes over the body, that DNA should change, as it did with Jay-Z Knight, did three tests and it proved that she was the DNA changed. So that's why I said, were they, because I wanted to do Kai Muga, and he has them coming out of his eyes, comes to have them coming out of his mouth. And the thing was to take a DNA swab of the apport as it comes out of his mouth or out of his eyes, and then see if the DNA changes. And if it does, well, then the whole world flips upside down. But you confirmed to me, yeah, they do. And they, and that's apparently the story, is they come out dry. So if he's bringing them out of his stomach or out of his mouth, they should be wet. They should have stuff on them that we can test. But that's, so that was one of the things. So take over for me and describe who this guy is. And we're going to do an interview with this guy. Describe the situation. Like, you're used to be in Winnipeg here. Now you're down in Kitchener and you're close to the center of action of all these weird conferences and stuff. So maybe describe some of the conferences you've been to, some of the stuff that you picked up, and where we're going to go with this support thing. We're probably going to do a second book. We've got the first book, which is called Weird. And it's out there, and it has some of the weirdest stories you'll ever read in your life all around the world of these various things that have appeared out of nowhere. And now we're going to do the second book and hopefully follow this research that you're doing down in the United States of these different physical mediums.
Well, I don't know where to start.
You should start with the synchronicity of how you found the first guys in Toronto.
Okay, so yes, it was a crazy synchronicity. So I have control of your messenger part of Facebook that's on your, it's not your personal one, and it's not even your, you know, we used to have three of your accounts. So anyways, one of the Grant Cameron accounts that people can send messages to is somehow attached, I don't even know how, to my messenger. And I've never known how to get in there, but anyways, so I only go in there like maybe twice a year, and I see that there's like 100 people that have emailed you super, super long stories, and I have no idea how to send it over to you, and I don't even know if you have access to it, and I don't know how I, because I made the account, I guess I have access to it, but so I never go on there, maybe once or twice a year, and I used to not even know how to get on there, except for if I happen to be in Messenger myself, and someone sends a message to you, it pops up as an alert. And then if I tap on it, it goes into your whole thing. So this Friday night, I can't even remember what month it was, April maybe, this Friday night, like at 10 o'clock at night, I just happened to be on my messenger, which I'm never on. I happened to be on it, and then it said like, bing, someone, Grant Cameron, something. So I tap on it, and then it switches over to your profile with all your messages. I'm like, oh my God, I haven't been on these since I moved to Kitchener in a year. And And there's tons of them. So I'm just like scrolling through going, oh my God, I'm never going to have any time to answer these poor people. And I'm scrolling through. And then there's just one random one that I just happened to click on. And it's a woman called Steph Allison. And she lives in the States. And she says in the message, like, hi, Grant, I saw you do, that you're doing some interviews or whatever on Apports and Physical Mediums. I'm a medium and you said that you wanted to go to one, and I know you live in Canada, and I know that there's this guy, Michael Shane, who's doing a seance in Toronto on this date.
What was the date?
I look at the date and I'm like, oh my God, I never even thought there might be seances in Toronto. Like, cool. And I'm only an hour away from Toronto. I look at the date and it's the next day. So this is 10 o'clock at night, Friday night, and the seance is noon on Saturday, the very next day. And I'm like, oh my God, I wonder, would I ever be able to go there? How would I? So I'm like, so I click on the link, and it's the link to buy a ticket. And I think there's no way there's going to be tickets left. So I try buying one. It says there's one left. And I'm like, oh my God, and we have something to do. So I was like, oh my God, should I change? How can I not change everything, the whole schedule, like whatever we were going to do and go, because what's the chance of that? And I don't know how to get into the circle of people of how you find out about things like that. Like, I don't know how, you know, to find out about that. So anyways, long story, I end up going. So it's Michael Shane. He's there the next day. I buy the ticket and I go by myself.
When she comes back with this amazing story, she's totally like, you know, on cloud nine, telling me all these fantastic things. I'm like, come on. Like, I gotta see this. Like,
it was
pretty amazing what she said, and it really had a profound effect on her. It was a
harder one to believe, because this is the healing seance. It wasn't an Apport one. It was the healing seance where the ectoplasm hands come out and grab you as you're sitting on the healing chair. And I didn't even know that. I thought it was a healing seance. I just thought it was just healing. And when we were sitting there, Michael was kind of saying, like, there's hands. Some people perceive them as female, some male, some children. And I'm just thinking, hands? This can't be the hand that I've seen, like an ectoplasm hand. I didn't even really know what to expect anyway. So I come out of the seance and I had hands grabbing me, like hard, like human hands, and I grabbed it back. You're allowed to grab it. If it touches you, you can touch it back. And I definitely grabbed it, and it kissed my head and did all these things. And I was like, the entire time, you cannot believe it, because it does not feel like, you know, how you, I don't know what you think ectoplasm hands feel like, but it just felt like human hands. Human, very determined and sure of themselves, what they were healing in me, hands grabbing me. And I grabbed it back, and it was felt like a human, like it wasn't cold, it wasn't hot, it just felt like a human hand. And so when I came, so the whole hour drive back at like midnight that I was coming back from Toronto, I was telling him the story, and he wasn't saying much. And as soon as I got home, he just says, like, get a pen and a paper and meet me in the kitchen. I want you to draw out, because he's just trying to figure out how they could have faked it. So like, where are the chairs? How could someone have been running around the back, and how could have this have happened? And I'm like,
I imagined it was going to be, you know, I didn't know anything about Michael at the time. I didn't know anything about these seances. And so I really wanted to understand, like, well, could they be hoaxing it? Cause that's something you really need to understand too. Right. And it's such a, when I went down in the States and saw it, it's such a basic setup. It's just like, they just use the chairs in the room. They just set up the cabinet, and it's really basic. It's just a thing with pipes with a curtain.
Like plastic PVC pipes. Yeah,
and the medium sits inside there on a chair, and that's it. I went and inspected the inside of this thing. There's nothing in there. I got to pat Michael down. I guess he sensed that I was skeptical.
He chose Matt out of 33 or whatever it was, 30-ish people. And he chooses different people. So like, you come and tape my eyes shut. You come and zip tie my hands. You put the tape on my mouth. You pat me down. You check the cabinet. He just like picks random people, so everyone can tell that, you know, you might have a chance. So, you know, he's not just picking people out of the audience that are his friends or whatever. But we were there. We went to the States. So I saw that Michael originally in Toronto, I think in April. And then he came back, and then I started following all these people and trying to figure out how I could see him again. And Steph who's the one who told you about Michael in Toronto, lives and runs a shop called The Healing Brew in Akron, Ohio, which is just five hours away from us, just down south in Ohio. And she says, oh, we host Michael a couple times a year. He's our our medium, you know, like that comes and teaches and does stuff. And we're having a conference this year. Her shop is having a conference and he's the main medium. And so he's going to have a couple different seances. And there was another woman there too, who's one of his students who had a red light seance at this conference as well, just a couple weeks ago. So me and Matt went down together to this one in Ohio and we saw three different seances. We did a black light apport one, a red light apport one as well. But it was also called a transfiguration, where the medium sits in the cabinet with a red light over her and you know, in an hour or however long the seance was, you could tell that there's weird things. Her fingers were growing. She has this long mustache, like her physical appearances change from the entity or whatever that she's channeling, basically.
And that's in a red light?
That's in a red light, yeah. So you can see it. And afterwards,
you saw that, Matt?
Yeah. Yeah, it was pretty strange. I think it's just the whole vibe of all the people in the room together, I think, has a lot to do with it. And then just everyone's chanting and oming, and you're sitting in a dark room and everyone's kind of on the same wavelength, and the medium's there and Michael's there. It's pretty bizarre. It's pretty bizarre. I was pretty impressed with the whole thing.
But it was good for him to be there, because even with me, and I'm skeptical, I'm skeptical of every single solitary channel that I do. I have to look it up on Google. I don't believe it. I obviously believe it, but it's like very hard to believe. Even my own stuff. So other people's stuff is very hard to believe. But the hands, the ectoplasm hands.
Tell them about the trumpet.
Oh, yeah. And then the trumpet.
Well, first, let's go back to explain who Michael is, because and some of these characters, because he's the main character. And we're going to do an interview with him, and you're going to be trained, I guess, by him. So explain who this guy is, and the, for people who may not know, how a physical medium thing is set up in order to, maybe Matt, you can talk about that, in terms of stopping people from pulling scams and stuff. How did they actually set this thing up in terms of what actually goes on out of seance?
They have a really basic setup. There's really nothing to it. They can set up in any hotel conference center. They just have their cabinet. Like I said, it's just fabric and pipes. And then they just put chairs around. And that's it. And then they black out all the doors, so there's no cracks of light getting in. And then they set up.
They have to seal those doors. So
with tape and stuff.
So it's tape and aluminum foil and like rugs or blankets. Like they're trying to get every single tiny little sliver of light has to be taken out. So they say like, go to the bathroom, do everything, because now you're sealed in. They used to say it was a hermetically sealed, but obviously it's not hermetically sealed. But they used to say that in the old days. But you sit and you watch them set up the cabinet in front of you. It's just the size of the guy and his chair. They're setting it up with these pipes, and they do it in front of everyone. So everyone can clearly see how many people are in the room, how they set up the cabinet, that the doors are sealed, taped shut, so you can't get out, you can't come in, you can't break the circle, you can't put the light on when the medium's in trance. So and you're sitting there for the 30 or 40 or 50 minutes while they're setting up. So there's nothing that can be hidden. It goes from a room with those PVC pipes in a bag, to the cabinet, to the guy in the cabinet, to picking different people to hook him up to the chair, to blindfold him, put the water in his mouth, tape his mouth. They're explaining everything every second to make sure everyone knows that there can't be any trickery, basically.
Do they check you before you go in the room?
No.
Destiny
told me something interesting the first visit when she was there alone. She said that the room was blacked out, but there was just enough light peeking through one spot where you could kind of, once your eyes adjust, you can see a little bit. You can see black silhouettes of the people sitting in the chair. And she said that she saw the trumpet flying around the room. And the trumpet has...
What's the trumpet?
The trumpet is what mediums use as a voice box. At some point in the seance, this disembodied voice starts to speak through the trumpet. Not all mediums can pull it off, but some can.
But the trumpet is really just like a big
like a metal cone. Like a metal cone. Yeah.
And they put like glow-in-the-dark tape on it. So if it starts moving during the seance, you can see it because there's glow in the dark tape. Some people also have ping pong balls that they put glow in the dark little dots on, so you can see, because it's completely blacked out, you can kind of see them moving around.
Tell me what you saw.
But sure, the trumpet is used, so they call it, or Michael called it, like an, I think they called it a pseudopod. He says that the ectoplasm that comes out of him, if the being wants to talk, which in people like Michael, Shane, and most, you know, traveling physical mediums that have been doing this for a long time, the trumpet always moves and the voice always talks. But I mean, I guess if you're just starting, you don't know if it's going to happen or not. You have to build up enough energy and build up enough good spirit communication. But this pseudopod is apparently, they get, a lot of the mediums get most of the ectoplasm coming out of, for Michael, he says it's the solar plexus. So the ectoplasm comes out of the solar plexus and makes a voice box inside the top of this cone trumpet. So they call it a pseudopod, and that's the voice box of his spirit team. His woman is called Lady Nada. And so it's the ectoplasm makes a little voice box at the top. And then when she comes to life in the seance, the trumpet starts whipping around the room and she's talking like a full voice through a trumpet. It sounds like it's her voice talking through a metal.
Yeah, Dester was so excited when she got back. She told me she was all freaked out. She says, I saw this trumpet like flying around above us with the glow in the dark tape. And there was like, there was no way it was just someone just running around a dark room holding a trumpet, because how could you do that? So all these things are going through my head. Well, it's got a fishing line. There's got to be something elaborate. I'm going, oh, come
on. Don't blame me at all. Like,
well,
and it's very.
I did a bit, but I'm still going. I pictured this kind of elaborate, you know, thing that they have set up where they could maybe pull something like this off. But when I went myself and I saw the people that were putting this on, I'm like, there's no way these guys could do this. Like how could the Michael jump out of the chair that he's zip tied to, grab the trumpet and start running around a dark room where he can't see anything?
How is he going to see, and how is he not going to trip and fall?
And
you can't see your hand in front of your face. It is black enough that you kind of get scared. The first one, I was scared. And when the trumpet started flying around, I actually wanted to run out. I was like, where is the door? And I was sitting with this lady that I just met there. And afterwards, I was like, oh my God. Like when the trumpet started at the beginning, and she's like, I was like, you know, get me out of here. We were both like, I was scared. I didn't think it was going to be so dramatic. And I didn't think I thought the hands would be like, you know, how they say, like very subtle. Like an impression, like most psychic things, when you go to these classes, you're like, what did you feel? Oh, I felt, and it's just a like super insanely subtle impression that a lot of people say, I didn't feel anything, because you have to be very creative and imaginative to say, I think I felt, because it's not real. Like this is real. Like this is real hands. You grab them. I felt the hand. I could tell, I couldn't actually tell if it was female or male, but I mean, I could feel it enough that I could feel that it was a real hand. You know, it's not a subtle, you don't have to have an imagination. It was like real. And that's very hard.
You said that the hand, you felt the hand, and the hand didn't feel like it could be like the sitter.
Well, definitely. I used to read palms. Like I was into palmistry when I was a kid. So the very first thing I do every time I see anyone's hands, I just look at them, because I know how to read nails and all that kind of stuff. So I'm just used to all the time looking at people's hands. So I saw Michael at the very beginning and just noticed I've never seen hands like that before in my whole life. But I, you know.
Well, you got to explain who Michael is. Let's go
over
about Michael and this Lady Nada. Who's his, this would be the control?
Yeah. So.
Does he just have the one?
So, no, he works with the Ascended Masters. Okay. So Michael, well, I don't know what to say about him. So he's a physical medium. I mean, he's been doing this, I think he said, for his whole life. He started, his father was also a physical medium that he didn't find out was his biological dad. It didn't sound like until he was older, but he grew up with this, and he was in these seances and in the spiritualist churches and stuff when he was a young kid. So he's grown up with this, and this physical medium that he was with his whole life and learning from. I mean, he told us tons of stories, but one of the stories was that the medium in the middle of the seance, when the lights came back on at the end, apported a Harley Davidson in the middle of the room when And that, you know, it sounds, I'm sure a lot of people listening, it sounds insane and it sounds crazy and impossible. And it, and that's why it's very easy. That's why I was trying to get Matt to explain that, because you can be skeptical, but when you go and actually see one, the entire time I was just trying to figure out how they could be faking it. And that's why I was saying about the hands. I know what Michael's hands look like when I didn't even know him. Right when I saw him talking, I just always noticed that. And I was like, those are not Michael's hands, no matter what. I didn't see anyone's hands.
He's a big guy.
He's a big guy, yeah.
He's a big guy. And you said the hands that you felt weren't obvious.
Yes, they were not. They were kind of hands like mine, where they're like long and bony, but they felt older than mine. But I just couldn't tell if it was a man or a woman. But I could see Michael's hands. And I see everyone's hands all the time. And I was just like, whose hands could these be? But I mean, it's very hard to.
And so you had a pretty aggravating back pain for.
Yeah, you were healed, right?
Yes.
I was. And that's the other thing. It's like
for a few weeks, at least
6 weeks. So unfortunately my pains came back, but for 6 weeks. So I've had back pain since I got in a car accident when I was like 18. And so for over three decades, I've had pain every single day with my back. And so when I went up there, the only parts of my back that the hands felt, like no one else in the room, I didn't know anyone there like at all. After the seance was over, you go around in the circle and each person says, if they want to share, what the hands did and what they felt and all that kind of stuff. And so you can see that there was about 23 or 24 people at that seance. Everyone was saying like the hands pressed on my ears and I have tinnitus and now my tinnitus is gone. And you can hear that each one, the hands do different things with each person, but the hands are doing what is wrong with the person. So the hands didn't touch my ears. I don't have ear or eye or head problems. The hands didn't touch me in any places I didn't have problems. The hands touched the top of my neck, my shoulders, and my lower back. It pushed me forward and felt my lower back. And wow. That, I have had back problems my whole life. And I came out of that seance and for 6 weeks, I was 100% healed. I was too scared. I was saying it every day, all the time. I'm like, do you even understand? Every day I was saying like, this is the craziest thing. I'm 100. That's why I'm like, I'm going to whatever school they have, whatever thing I have to do. I am healed. I'm like, I couldn't believe it. It was like a miracle. It was really like a miracle.
You also said that all the people in afterwards were all in tears.
Everyone was really crying, really
emotionally.
I was crying. It was really crazy. And the whole time I just keep thinking, whose hands are these? But at the same time, I could feel stuff going through my body. So again, if it was someone who, if they're faking it, how did I get healed? If it was just like some random, like they just pay some one of those people to come up in, and somehow how do they see and not trip over everyone? And how do you not sense that they're in front of you because you can't see? But sometimes there was a crack of light at the top enough that I could kind of see something. And I just stared at that place the whole entire time to see if I could see people running around or doing anything. And that happened to be where the hand was when I was finally sitting at the end, where the hand came and it went like, it took my hand and raised it and kissed my hand. And I looked and that's where the light was coming. And there was nothing kissing my hand, but I heard and I felt and I looked like this and I like thought I was cheating or something by looking. There was nothing there. Like if you can explain it if you experience it, but I know that it's hard for people to believe that if they haven't been there. But still, I'm not saying who Michael is. So Michael, well, I don't know his whole life story kind of thing, but he's been doing this for a long time. He learned from a physical medium who was his father. He learned out later. And he's been seeing Apport for his whole entire life. So he's been doing this forever and he lives down in Ohio and he travels around. They're traveling. So he goes to Switzerland and they go all over the world, just like Kai. You know, it's like they go and they build this cabinet and they perform all over the world. He goes to Alaska and all over the whole world.
We can leave a link.
Yeah, I definitely. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Reverend Michael Shane, Michael with a Y. So I don't know what else I could say about him, but he's amazing.
You talked about the money that he doesn't really make any money off this. Can you, because a skeptic might bring that up. So talk about the money aspect to it.
Yeah, so I know that a lot, I mean, we know as authors, and we get comments once in a while like, oh, these people are just doing another interview because they have another book out. And it's like, I don't think anyone really realizes how much money we make publishing books, but it's not a lot. And at conferences, I think people don't understand that a lot of people that do conferences make $200 or $300 or $500. I think a lot of people in this field think that, you know, we're making thousands or hundreds of thousands of dollars talking at a conference or writing a book. And so there is no money to be made, hardly. And it's the same thing with these conferences. So the conferences are like, I think this is $100 in the States, it was like $125 or something per seance. I think it was about 125. But there was only like 10 people there.
Hardly any people there. And if you factor in the cost of renting a conference center for the weekend and all the promotion and stuff, I don't think they're making not enough money to, you know, like, it doesn't make any sense. And,
definitely.
And when I didn't know anything about Michael, but when I met him, right away, you just see who this guy is. And he's a really warm, genuine guy. He doesn't seem like the kind of guy who would go through his whole life just to trick people and hoax people.
To make a couple $100 here and there. And so for people who think that the apports he's regurgitating or something, again, it's like how he, the last seance we were at, or maybe not the last one, but when we were in the States there with him, one of these seances, we have a bunch of the little apports here that we were given to us from him. But he apported 1,755 apports. So if you think, and they're all different shapes and sizes, and if you think that that someone can hold 1,700, I don't know how to make it really see.
Yeah, it's good. You can.
1,755 of these little things. Matt got a couple big ones.
Wow.
But these were all, and then so he gives them away. So he doesn't keep any of these, and they're like rubies. I got one little ruby. They're rubies and like sapphires, and these are labradorite. But anyways, even if how much would he have had to pay for these, and how would he have regurgitated them? He's blowing them. So how he explains this is that there's a portal that opens in his mouth, and that's where they're, you know, coming through. So they're not in his mouth. They're being brought through this like portal in his mouth, and he's like blowing them. We have a couple good videos of him doing it, but he's blowing them through dry onto this. They have four volunteers again out of the audience that are just holding this
like a sheet.
Blanket. Yeah. This like sheet.
Catches them all.
Yeah. And then they count them, and then they give them away. He gives them all away. He doesn't keep any of them. So if he had to pay for these, I don't know how much it would cost to pay for these, but I mean, if he had to pay even $100 for these, it's a little hard. Yeah. And if he had to pay for these and then give them all away, but then he makes a couple $100, but I mean, the people that ran the conference had to make some money. He didn't get all that money, obviously. So if you really think about traveling expenses and him doing this his whole entire life to be having some trick, but what we know, because he also did a billet,
Wait, let's just go back before we talk about
that. Okay.
So
he couldn't have put 1,700 jams this big in his mouth, 1,755. It's impossible. His cheeks weren't like this when he came out. He was blowing them, and it was thousands of them coming down.
Can I stop for a sec? Have we got permission to use the tape? Because maybe you can edit the tape in here.
Yeah, okay.
Oh, yeah.
So that people can see what we're talking about and who this guy is. And didn't you say to me that he was offered a pile of money to go to Vegas and do this and turn it down?
Yep, he said he was offered, I hate to get the story wrong.
It was a big contract.
It was like $3 million or something he had to perform in Vegas. And he said no. And they came back and they doubled the offer. So maybe it was like $6 million after that. He said no again. And then they came back. He said it's not like a sideshow. Like, I can't do this. I'm not doing it for this reason. It's not like
how does that link to the spirit guides and to this Lady Nada? So who are his controls?
Well, maybe can explain the whole seance. So
okay, we'll get to the control.
No, just do it step by step. So it's in the blacked out room, but before the lights go out, he calls people up to pat them down, inspect the cabinet, check the chair, check everything. He puts a piece of duct tape over his mouth.
First, he drinks a water.
He drinks water and he measures the water in the bottle.
And then he spits it out after, so you could see that he's spitting out the same amount of water. And he
gets colored water.
Huh?
Is it colored water or just ordinary water?
Regular water.
No, just water. Regular. Yeah, just regular.
And the water's in his mouth to show that he doesn't tamper with his mouth. And he has the duct tape over his mouth.
Okay.
And someone signs it.
Someone signs the duct tape.
Okay.
So he goes into the cabinet and then he's zip tied. He's got the straps on him that they tie him down with onto the chair. So he can't move. And then the seance commences. And then you hear Lady Nada come in, which is another voice. It's a really strange woman's voice. Kind of creeped me out, but pretty interesting. And she's giving messages to people in the audience. And then after that's done, the lights come on. Michael comes out of the cabinet and he's got the duct tape on. And then you can see that his cheeks aren't puffed out. He's got all these apports starting to come out of his mouth, and he's letting them all come out onto the cloth.
But first they go and they pull the tape off his mouth. He spits the water into the glass.
Right.
So you can see that he just spit the water out into the glass, and then he starts blowing out all these apports. So the point of that is so you can tell he wasn't talking in the seance because he had water in his mouth. And now that he's about to start shooting out all the apports, and they don't always only come out of his mouth, but in this case, the water being in there is to show that it's not.
And it's just really hard to, you know, as a skeptical person, just to say, well, you know, he just put them in his mouth. But there's so many. How could you put that many in your mouth, that many gems, with duct tape over your mouth and breathe? You have to breathe through your nose. And I was trying to figure this out. I was like, holy shit, like this is, I can't believe this. Like, how is he doing this? And the last one he did, he had like 1,700 tiny gems, and they're all like sharp, like pieces of glass. Like if he made one mistake, he'd be inhaling them, or they'd be going down into his stomach. It's not an easy thing to do. And you see the amount that comes out. There's so many. It's like, holy cow.
And you were looking like, oh, we had a camera right in his face, and his things are never like that, but he's blowing. So it's not like if you pictured yourself packed, filled, and you're just like putting it out, it would be filled with slobber, and it would just be like, you couldn't just blow it out. But the way he explains it sounds to me makes sense, that there's the portal there and he's just blowing. So the stuff that's coming out of the portal is just blowing onto the cloth. Because if it was just his cheeks packed, you could not be blowing. Because some of them, 1,700, some of them are so small. Like this isn't even close to the smallest one. And they're all, what's it called, faceted. They're all like, have these little facets in them. So they're sharp, super, super, super sharp, and like the size of a grain of rice, some of them. So how would you pack that at the same time as some of like ones that are this big? It's impossible. We know it's impossible.
And that's where I wanted to do the experiment. That's why I said to you, did they come out dry? And so I said to you, remember, I said, if you learn to do this, the job will be for Matt is how to film this thing close up. And so I said, if Desta learns how to do this, remember that when you shoot out the apports, to keep your mouth open so we can photograph what's going on inside your mouth. Because I looked at the thing and his mouth isn't open enough that you could, you must be some way you can get a camera that's a close up that you can actually see. Because if they're forming in his mouth, in a portal type thing. I mean, if you could catch that on camera and you could actually see where they're coming from in his mouth. So that's why I said to Desta, make sure when you do it, when it comes time for you to do it, keep your mouth open so we can see what's going on.
There's lots of good video of him doing it. People film him as he's doing it almost every seance. So there's tons of videos out there.
But you need to have it inside his mouth, almost like a camera that goes in there.
Yeah.
You can actually see the thing. Because that's what he's saying. That's the whole thing about them being dry, is that they're forming. They're not really in his mouth. They're in a portal. They're forming and they're coming out dry. And so if they're forming in his mouth, if you can somehow get a close-up, you can actually see these things forming inside his mouth, which should be absolutely dramatic.
The big one, the biggest one that he's ever apported was actually at Steph Healing Brew in Akron. And she said that as it was coming out, it was so big, his mouth was as open as it could be. And she says that you could, the other thing that he says is that it goes from gas to liquid to like solid. Yeah. So he says that it's starting in the portal, I guess, as gaseous. And then it's forming into liquid very quickly. And as the liquid is like hitting the air or whatever, it's then forming into like matter, you know, like something hard. So she's saying that when this big, gigantic one, I think it was like, it was huge. It was the size of a, I don't know if they said an orange or a grapefruit, but
it's pretty big.
It was huge. It was the size of their hand. She said that as it was forming, she said that you could see that it wasn't form, and then it was like solidifying. So she said as it was coming out of his mouth, like there was nothing there, and then it was hardening as the actual form, like matter, as it was coming out. So I don't know if you would actually be able to see a portal, but she was making it sound like there was nothing. And then as it was coming out, this thing that was so big, it was forming, you know, like I don't know how to say it.
Well, that'll be Matt's job to catch that on camera. If you could catch something like that on camera of this thing changing shape and forming and whatever. I mean, it's like an excellent opportunity because he allows that, where he allows the camera to film as this stuff is done. And it's even dramatic just watching him do it. But then, of course, everybody has a thing. Oh, it's coming out of his stomach. It's coming out of his mouth. He's learned some way to do it or whatever. But if you can get some sort of camera that can zoom in very, very close and watch this happening, even a better view of where they're coming from inside his mouth. I mean, that to me is like, it's like unreal. Yeah. Now, explain who the guides are and how that works in terms of who's sort of controlling the situation here.
So the other thing I'll just say too is that it doesn't always come out of his mouth. A lot of them come out of his chest or solar plexus. So I don't know. I haven't seen those videos. So that might be easier because he said there was a hamster. A hamster came out of his chest. A corn snake came out of his mouth, and a dog that was sitting in the car. One of the sitters' dogs. She left it in the car. It came out of his solar plexus and then jumped off of his lap onto the ground, and then found her in the circle, went and just jumped on her lap, and she brought her back to the car and said the dog wasn't in the car anymore. So he just apported it from like the parking lot of, you know, before the seance, and it came out of his solar plexus. So
I mean, if you can catch any of that on camera, man, I mean, that's like unbelievable. I mean, it's like, and he's allowing this to happen. He's allowing this sort of investigation to take place where it's just a matter of setting up an experiment where you can catch something like this on camera, and then we're going to make $1 million.
Well, Shannon, and remember too, Shannon, we've interviewed her before, Shannon Taggart, and we'll make sure that we interview her. Oh, I should have had her book. I have her book called Seance. So she's a photographer, and we're about to go see her in Lilydale in a couple of weeks. And
explain Lilydale before you go on. Explain what's happening in Lilydale. What is Lilydale, and where are you going, and what's this all? Give a little promotion for what's going to happen down there.
Well, I'm so lucky now to be living over here. No offense to Winnipeg or you, but I didn't realize how we could never see anything in Winnipeg because nothing comes there, and it is so far from other big centers that there isn't a lot of things that come there. So in Kitchener, we're only an hour west of Toronto, and we're just on the other side of the lake. We have two different ways that in an hour or two, we could get to either Detroit or Buffalo, New York. And so around that Lake Erie, Lake Erie is Lilydale. So Lilydale is a spiritualist center.
A hub for seance people and mediums.
Yeah.
We went to a place called Casadega in Florida when we were in Florida in January. And it's the sister city, I think, of Casadega, which is just another like spiritualist town. So you go in there and basically everyone has a house and they're all mediums and there's crystal shops and seances and readings and all different kind of things. So it's like a spiritualist town. I can't give you the whole history of Lilydale because we haven't been there yet, but we are going to a conference where Shannon's going to be doing a presentation about her book called Seance, which is her photographing Kai and Michael and tons of mediums all over the world. She spent a long time. I don't know if it was 5 years, but it was many years. Photographing all the seances and being allowed to see them in the cabinet and being allowed to take pictures of the ectoplasm. So these are, you know, a lot of photos. It's a hardcover, absolutely beautiful book. We should have had it here.
That's the one Dan Aykroyd did the.
And Dan Aykroyd did the.
Dan Aykroyd's really big on that.
Yeah.
I just wanted to say, you could try and you know, get video evidence of this, but I really don't think that that's the whole experience of this.
Oh no!
If I would have just been there and I would have just seen Michael do the apports, I would have been impressed and I meant that's pretty neat. But what I was impressed by was when I first sat down the very first time in a room with Michael, he kind of just singled me out for a second, said, "Hey, I'm picking something up from you," He says, some guy you work with, a tall guy, he's in pain.
Oh, yeah.
And I said, what? I said, who do I work with? Some tall guy. I'm like, what's he talking about? I'm like, no, it's not. And then it clued out the second time, holy crap. He's talking about Noel. And Noel's an older guy that works with us, and he's got a knee injury. And then, like, right away, I was like, that's pretty interesting. And then so the first one I sat in on with Michael was what he calls the billet seance, right? Mm-hmm. And that blew me away. Even more than the apports. The apports was really cool, but the billets, it just blew my mind. I couldn't believe what I was witnessing.
So it's the same. It's a different kind of seance that he also does, and it's called billet reading. Mm-hmm. And what are they?
So
maybe we can take a break now. I've got to take a 10-minute break.
Oh, you do? Okay.
And
point.
Then we can start with that and continue. I think it's going to be one of the best videos. We'll put this do part two once I get back. But I think this is one of the most interesting stories I've ever done. I mean, writing this all down. You got your little map that you drew for Matt and stuff when it first came down. Because, I mean, I think this is absolutely fascinating. It's something you can actually study and you can actually go back again and again and again and explore. It's not like a one-time UFO event or whatever that you can.
It's a neat experience for anybody who's interested in it. To sit down and witness that, whether you're skeptical or not, it's pretty neat.
And it's good that you're skeptical, because then we've got sort of another aspect where people may know that Destin and I do this kind of stuff, but you're not in the limelight. You're a business guy, and this is something very new to you. And I think it adds to the story that you're involved in this whole thing. Plus, you're a technical guy that you can sort of see some of the aspects of what could be faked and what, you know, obstacles you have to overcome.
Yeah, he's an audio guy too. And so he's taken courses and all that kind of thing. So we watch all the paranormal caught on camera and all these shows, and he instantly is like, that's bullshit, that the camera can do this and this and this. And he knows instantly, like, a lot of technical audio stuff like that. So he always thinks everything's fishing line. But okay, we'll pause it and let me try and see if it's
10 minutes. And then and then later on, you can stick that video on the end of part one.
We will. Okay.
That's this week's episode of the Paranormal UFO Consciousness Podcast. I'm your host, Grant Cameron, hoping that you will join me for upcoming episodes. Links to my YouTube interviews, books, and my Facebook sites are in the show notes. If you love the podcast or learn something valuable, we'd love for you to subscribe, rate, or give a review on today's episode. If you would like a certain paranormal subject dealt with in the future, please let us know. Until next time, watch this space, and thank you so much for listening.